Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to be with you today. We begin, as always, with the latest on health and healing. Now, this comes from Birla Institute of Technology and Sciences in India, and it's using garlic to combat antimicrobial resistance urinary tract infections. Now, we have a lot of urinary tract infections in the United States for a lot of different reasons. Excess sugar, candida, a yeast overgrowth. But by the way, one of the things we do not talk about, maybe it's just embarrassing and people don't want to talk about it, is that when we defecate, we wipe with toilet paper, but we don't generally wash. In other countries, you have bidets where you have a toilet that when you finish, then a soap suds come out with a stream of warm water, cleans the anus area, and then dries. And so, you know, we don't do that. And I don't know why. Isn't it amazing? Because we think we're clean. Well, that's not clean. In fact, all those very toxic bacteria come out, and then when you move, you exercise, you walk, it spreads, it becomes lubricated, and it goes down. Now, where does it go? It goes in women right up to the urethra, into the urethra, and that is one of the causes of urinary tract infections. So, that's not good. So, my suggestion is wipe, yes, wash with soap and water so you're actually clean. Just a suggestion. Many of I'm sure are already doing that because you practice proper hygiene. Just like when you're washing your hands, do you ever clean under your fingernails? Most people don't. Have you ever seen some of the cooking shows, how the chefs will try something, work with something, go from one item to another, never washing their hands? They don't. Now, what about their fingernails? Do they scrub underneath the fingernails to get rid of the debris? Because that's a point of infection. In fact, we spread more germs each day, or collect more germs, in three ways. One, through the eyes, the nose, and the mouth. Now, we do have some protections. You know, we have some antibodies in there that help destroy anything that can be harmful to the body. But our hands, we're touching money, we're touching doorknobs, opening a cab, getting onto a subway. Think of all the things you do, shaking hands. What if someone's coughed in their hand, sneezed in their hands, and now you shake their hand? That's on you. Then you touch your mouth, your eyes, and we touch our mouth and eyes hundreds of times a day. Just saying, don't be germophobic. That's not what I'm suggesting. Just be hygienic. It's that simple. All right? Now, garlic is one of the great foods of all time. It has multiple medicinal values. And in fact, one of the things I suggest for school teachers is always before you go into a class, just go around to each desk and just spray some alcohol on it or hydrogen peroxide and just wipe it down before the class starts. Get yourself a little ionizer up on your desk. That helps trap a lot of the viruses and bacteria and molds and danders and particulate matter in the air, so you're not breathing it. Now, in every situation where someone gets sick, a few other people get sick, but the majority of people don't. That's because their immune systems are stronger. Garlic is one of those things that helps kill all forms of bacteria and viruses, etc. So if someone's got a cold in your family, okay, just do this. Make sure that when they finish brushing their teeth, they put their toothbrush upside down in some hydrogen peroxide. That disinfects it. Otherwise, you end up with what is known as rebound infection. Something that should last a day or two, last 2 or 3 weeks, because every time you brush your teeth, you're reinfecting your gums and your mouth and your immune system. Alcohol or hydrogen peroxide, everything someone would touch, like doorknobs, toilet flush, refrigerator handles, and of course, have them eat off paper plates when they're sick and using disposable stuff so they finish, you throw it away. Paper cups, throw it away. Because you don't have autoclave equipment. That's equipment that we use in the laboratory to sterilize. Instruments that hospitals use to sterilize. You don't have that. So just running some water over it, you know, even some soap suds, doesn't mean you've got rid of all the virus and bacteria. In fact, when I go into a restaurant, I always carry a pair of my own, well, my own fork and spoon, and I do it very discreetly. I don't make a scene about it because I don't know the hygiene of someone in that kitchen. And also when they bring the food out to you and the utensils after you've left, they wipe down a table. What do you think they wipe with? Do you think they're using a disinfectant? No, they use a cloth. So everything that's on the table is still there. It's just smudged around. It's like you taking an apple, say, apple, I'm going to clean it. And you rub it against, you know, your pants or shirt. All you did is smear it. You didn't eliminate it. It's not gone anywhere. It's still there. So we live with these myths about hygiene and how easy it is to infect others or ourselves. So when someone comes out and they're resetting the table and putting down the napkin, they're putting down your silverware with their hands. Did they go in and wash their hands? No. I've owned three very successful restaurants my career. In fact, back in 1970, I opened up the Fertile Earth on 108th and Broadway. And for 10 years, it was the most popular and the first or a gourmet vegan restaurant in America. And it was packed, activists mainly. You'd always know when the FBI was there, their crew cuts and their socks. No, we had everyone eating there, including a lot of artists. And it was a wonderful way to socialize, find out what was going on in the world, share information. But I was very particular about hygiene. And I would be in the kitchen cooking each day. And I knew when I was cooking, I was washing the salads, they were washed, because I do this. I take salad greens and then I spray them with a veggie wash. And you can also use apple cider vinegar and hydrogen peroxide. And then you agitate it in water in a bowl. And that agitation is allowing all the nooks and crannies and creases that might hold salmonella or E. coli. It allows those to be washed out. And then I rinse it. Then I do it again. I do it three times. And then when I see that the water is clean, then I spin it down and it's ready to use. I've been in restaurants, including high-end restaurants, where it's busy. They're just taking stuff out of a box and putting it right on your plate. I remember just recently, I went into a health food store and I wanted to have a vegetable juice. And all they really had were some celery, good, carrots, great, you know, and some apple. And they were taking it right out of the bag, you know, the big bag. It hadn't been washed. Oh, it's organic, the guy says. I says, and so is your crap. It's organic. All right, wash it. He didn't like that, but he washed it. And I'm watching him. And afterwards, he didn't wash down the machine. So I don't eat anything raw outside. I don't eat anything raw in a restaurant because I know how dirty restaurants can be. I know how many times I had to instruct my staff cleanliness. Because someone comes out of the restroom, doesn't wash their hand, now making your salad? Well, I call that an ass salad, not one I would eat. And by the way, when you go to the beach, and people are going to the beach and having a good time, good. But right now, I would check to see which beaches in the United States are safe. Safe from what? Well, in Florida, you have all types of flesh-eating microorganisms in the soil and in the water, toxic water. You can't find clean water in the Gulf of Mexico. It's so polluted. But you've got the algae blooms. That's very toxic. Even to breathe it is toxic. But lo and behold, a new study last week showed that over half of the main beaches in the United States, including out Long Island, are polluted at a toxic level with human feces. Yes. So when you look, you can't see it, you know, but it's there, and it's beyond a level of safety. So I wouldn't go in the water, no way. In a swimming pool, yes, but not a public swimming pool. And a friend of mine teaches aerobics classes and a very good instructor, one of the best. And I asked him one day, I said, do you instruct all the people before they get in the pool, about 30 people, to go in the shower and properly wash themselves so their body's clean? No. So they just come from work or wherever they're at and go, you know, get in their outfit, go right in the pool? Yes. I said, have you ever taken a sample of the water to see how much A, chlorine gas you're breathing in, and B, how many feces per cubic feet of water is in that water? What do you mean? Feces in the water? I said, yes. every swimming pool in America has feces in the water. Maybe your immune system's strong enough to kill them. What about parasites in the water? Merely saying, I'm not asking you to be germophobic, I'm asking you to be conscious. Why end up sick where hundreds of millions of food poisonings happening each year in the United States? People are not paying attention, or they don't care. But when they get sick, then they care. Anyhow, garlic, back to the point. Garlic extract may be effective as a weapon against the multi-drug resistant strains of pathogenic bacteria associated with urinary tract infections. That's according to a study published in the Pertanka Journal of Tropical Agricultural Science. All right, so once again, use garlic. Don't burn garlic. Don't overcook garlic, only till it's translucent. But I put garlic in so many dishes, right? And because it's not only medicinal, but especially maybe in the wintertime, or in my case, when I've been lecturing so much that my voice is hoarse, and I'm on the road, and I'm going from city to city, I always take liquid garlic. It comes in a little tube, and I take one teaspoon, wash it around in my mouth, and then it coats my throat. I then put two droplets of syringes of colloidal silver right behind it. And then I follow it all off with a quarter teaspoon of Manuka honey. Put it in the back of the throat, just let it melt. Now between those three, strep throat, anything in the throat, any bacteria, viruses, they're gone, they're dead. And then take some aloe vera, and that helps clean your entire intestine. Then take some probiotics, and you're good to go. Now you've got a lot of resistance against anything that could put you in bed. Oh, and by the way, if you think that doesn't happen, my brothers have, and sometimes I think I should get a genetic test just to see if they're really my brothers. Whoa, I mean, they're from West Virginia, and what can I tell you, right? So anyhow, they wanted to join me on a research trip on aloe vera, where it actually comes from. Almost all of it is sold in the United States. It came from the Dominican Republic, which is part of Hispaniola, which is Haiti on one side and the Dominican Republic on the other, much larger Dominican Republic. And so we're way up, in the mountains, and we're doing our work, but they wanted to see all around the city. And I had a couple other friends with me. There are about six of us. So one of my buddies who lives there said, I've got this great restaurant that we can go to. It's the best in the capital. Okay, so we went. It's very pretty, very, very tropical, plants everywhere. I said, Morty, don't they have power blackouts all the time down here? Oh yeah, every day, every day. And how long is the power out? Well, sometimes it's out for, a tower, 2 hours, sometimes 8 hours. So if the power is out every day and they don't have backup generators, then why would you eat in a restaurant? He said, well, there's no problem there. I'm sure they have safety. So I said, hold on a second. So they're looking at the menu, and I walk back into the kitchen. There's a chef there, and I say, excuse me. First of all, there was a big bucket of dirty water with one of those big mops in it. And by the way, that's another thing Americans are really unique at, stupidity. I mean, beyond dumb. How is it that you see it, and everyone sees it in every film where someone's mopping a floor? They're taking one of those long, stringy mops, putting it in, mopping it, putting it back in there, shaking it a couple times, and then putting it back on the floor. They're mopping with dirty water. What that? And in fact, if that's the mindset, then I suggest that they no longer are allowed to flush toilet paper. Just when you finish with it, put it on the side. And when you go back in, use it again. Use it 100 times. Yeah? Well, that's how stupid it is to use mop a floor and keep putting it back in that bucket. Wow. Somewhere, someone lost some genes of common sense. Anyhow, here's the bucket right up on a part of the table where all the food is made. And all the refrigerator doors are open. And I said, electric problems? Yeah. When did it start today? Early this morning. This is 7 o'clock at night. So I'm thinking, okay, then all the meat and fish, chicken, that's all contaminated. And but then I also saw that he was cutting meat on the same table he was cutting vegetables, not washing the knife, not washing the table. See, this is what the average person's never shown because it's not interesting. Who cares about hygiene? You know, we're Americans. We don't care about hygiene. We'll put 3,000, you know, sprays on our hair and we'll do, you know, 15 inches of makeup and we'll have our nails done, but we got dirty mouth, dirty nose, dirty butt, you know, dirty armpits, but we'll just spray it. God, I just think, whoa, someone got left off on the wrong platform of common sense. Anyhow, so I went back and I told my brothers and my friends, I said, fellas, let's not eat anything here. You'll get sick. Ah, you know, and once again, that we're tough, you know, a little tiny microbe. And so I didn't eat anything. I just got some bottled water and enjoyed the company. And they had a good meal to them. Oh, this is very good. The next morning, all of them were sick. All of them with diarrhea and the cramps. And Gary goes, no, I'm not going to do anything. You need this pain. We don't need the pain. Yeah, you do. You got to have some lesson in life you're going to learn from, even a painful one. Now, I'm going to sit here and watch you crap your brains out and vomit for another hour. So then I went, yeah, I didn't. I was just being sarcastic. So I went down the street and I came to a drugstore and I got some charcoal. And then from my buddy, he had some herbs. And so I made a concoction and washed out their system. They were okay. But it lasted 10 days to get those parasites out. And that destroyed the whole trip because we were only down there 12 days, 2 weeks. That's just one example of tens of millions that occur each year in the United States. So be conscious of where you eat, especially in raw food restaurants. The concept is good, but you don't know what they're doing. You don't know if they've washed the food before they start working with it with their hands. You don't know if someone's sick and their snot's falling into or they're coughing right into that dish that's going to be prepared and look very pretty. Hygiene makes a difference. And garlic and onion help. Why? Because inside the garlic you have what is called allium, A-L-L-I-U-M, sativum, S-A-T-I-V-U-M. That's the healing part of garlic. All right? So get garlic into your system. And next study is about vitamin D and COVID. According to Arizona State University, vitamin D3 is essential. And why? Because it boosts your normal immune system up. But most people don't have enough vitamin D3, and so they're insufficient. But recent studies have found a strong association of serum vitamin D with the rate and severity of COVID infections. So that's important. The more vitamin D3 in safe ranges, the less likely you are to stay sick, get sick with COVID. All right, that's what this study showed. And these were multiple studies. They were using 10,000 units of vitamin D3 a day for 2 weeks. And that's important. And finally, fragrance at night boosts older adults' memory. This is from the University of California at Irvine. So when neuroscientists exposed older adults to a fragrance for 2 hours every night for 6 months, they reaped a 226% increase in cognitive capacity. Whoa! There's no nutrient that could do that compared to a control group. The researchers say the finding transformed the long-known tie between smell and memory in an essay. And this is non-invasive. You just put some drops on your pillow, and you're going to smell that. Lavender is right up there at the top. Lemongrass is also up there at the top. So for if you have any impairment in your cognition and memory, then try that. All right? You could also simply get a simple little, cost about $20, a little diffuser. You put some water in it, then you put your oil in it, and then it diffuses silently into the air all night. And that's good. Okay? And there's a whole list of things you can get. You should all have a home apothecary in any case, colloidal silver, and also black curcumin seed, black oil is called. That's very important. It kills everything that you're going to have in your body. That's how it's promoted. But we have to understand your olfactory capacity or ability to smell can predict development of nearly 70 neurological and psychiatric diseases, including Alzheimer's and dementia, Parkinson's, schizophrenia, and alcoholism. Yeah. So have all of the essential oils at home too, and even aromatherapy. Read up on it. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. In just a moment, when we come back from the break, we're going directly into a series of clips that should really, well, it should give you a sense of pause, because the very institutions that we've been told, trust us, we're telling you the truth, not true. We want to thank the Morrises on Redacted, good website, good programs, because they brought all these together. Now, this is all within your lifetime. So the question is, do we learn from history, or do we just keep saying lessons learned and go on? Where nothing has changed, same institutions, same people in some cases, still control our perceptions of reality. I think you're going to find this very interesting. All right? Oh, and by the way, one last little quick. University of Sydney, as well as Brescia University in Italy, found that a vegetarian diet can reduce your risk of heart disease. All right? Do it right. Live longer. Now to a break and then the clip.
What do you have to say about dictators of countries like Indonesia, who we sell weapons to, yet they are slaughtering people in East Timor? What do you have to say about Israel, who is slaughtering Palestinians, who impose martial law? What do you have to say about that? Those are our allies. Why do we sell weapons to these countries? Why do we support them? Why do we bomb Iraq when it commits similar problems?
There are various examples of things that are not right in this world, and the United States is trying... I really am surprised that people feel that it is necessary to defend the rights of Saddam Hussein, when what we ought to be thinking about is how to make sure that he does not use weapons of mass destruction.
I'm not defending them in the least. What I am saying is that there needs to be consistent application of U.S. foreign policy. We cannot support people who are committing the same violations because they are political allies. That is not acceptable. We cannot violate U.N. resolutions when it is convenient to us. You're not answering my question, Madam Albright.
You briefed the press, did you not, when you were there?
Well, I had several jobs. One of my jobs was that of analyst. I also was an interrogator and indeed briefed the press when we, the CIA, wanted to circulate disinformation on a particular issue. Disinformation is not necessarily a lie. It may be a half-truth. And we would pick out a journalist. I would go do the briefing and hope that he would put the information in print.
What was your percentage of success?
We were pretty successful in planning information of a rather rarefied nature. For instance, if we wanted to get across to the American public that the North Vietnamese were building up their force structure in South Vietnam, I would go to a journalist and advise him that in the past 6 months, X number of North Vietnamese forces had come down the Ho Chi Minh Trail system through southern Laos. Now, there is no way a journalist can check that information. That's data derived from radio intercepts, spy in the sky photography. So either he goes with the information or he doesn't, and ordinarily or usually, the journalist would go with it because it looked like some kind of exclusive. Go after these gentlemen. I would be directed to cultivate them, to spend time with them at the Caravelle Hotel or at the Continental Hotel, to socialize with them, and slowly but surely to try to gain their confidence by dolloping out valid information which was true. And then I would drop into a conversation the data that we wanted to get across, which might not be true. One piece of data, for instance, that we managed to plan in the New Yorker magazine had to do with a supposed North Vietnamese effort in 1973 to develop airfields along the border of South Vietnam. The reason we wanted to plant this information was that we were trying to persuade the U.S. Congress that Saigon should be continued to continue to get a great deal of aid, and that the North Vietnamese were the chief violators of the ceasefire accord. That was printed in the New Yorker magazine under the byline of Robert Chaplin, as indeed was a great deal of such information which we tried to circulate.
Frank, a two-part question. What were the objectives of the, or what was the objective of the CIA? What about the moral implications of what you were doing in feeding this information? Did the objective override the moral implications, moral problems?
Well, the objective of the agency in general is to generate intelligence and get it back to Washington, to get at the truth and make sure the policymakers understand it. When you plant disinformation, you are diverging from that objective, and I think probably in retrospect, it was very counterproductive. I am, as an ex-CIA agent, opposed to the disinformation activities in which I was involved. I admit that I was involved, and I think it served no useful purpose. Propagandizing the American public or Congress is not the CIA's job. As to the morality of what the CIA was doing or that particular activity, the war was a very relative thing. It was a relativist environment, and morality seldom came into play when you were operating in the field. In my estimation, a CIA man should be amoral. That may sound pretty shocking to somebody, but what if my morality were that of a Nazi or agent, if you will? You wouldn't want me to be your intelligence officer. Keep the morals out of intelligence. Keep the truth in, and stay away from disinformation.
It would have been more appropriate for Mr. Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, to address this House according to Article 144, an article which was specifically designed to debate violations of human rights, democracy, and the rule of law, which is clearly the case with Mr. Trudeau. Then again, a Prime Minister who openly admires the Chinese basic dictatorship, who tramples on fundamental rights by persecuting and criminalizing his own citizens as terrorists just because they dared to stand up to his perverted concept of democracy, should not be allowed to speak in this House at all. Mr. Trudeau, you are a disgrace for any democracy. Please spare us your presence. Thank you.
And it might sound radical, colleagues, but the answer to war is not more war, it's peace. And peace isn't delivered by the barrel of a gun. It's delivered by diplomacy, by dialogue. You can wish away your continent's history, but we share a continent with Russia. We will sit down with Russia. There will be a negotiated peace, and this organization should be promoting it earlier rather than delaying it and making sure that more Ukrainians die. Your feigning of sympathy rings hollow. It makes me sick, to be honest with you.
We become involved when disinformation poses a threat to the security of our country. It is when there's a connectivity to a threat to our country. It could be a threat, a connectivity to violence. And what this working group does is precisely what I would think you would want it to do, which is to take a look at the work, the disinformation work that our department has done, and ask the following questions. Do we have policies? Do we have guardrails? Do we have standards?
But here's the problem. We can't even agree what disinformation is.
This is
You can't even agree that it was disinformation, that the Russians fed information to the Steele dossier. If you can't agree to that, how are we ever going to come to an agreement on what is disinformation so you can police it on social media?
Senator, I have 2 points, if I may finish. Number one, that what this office, what this working group does, because it's not an office, what this working group does is ensure that there are guardrails, definitions, standards to make sure that the free speech rights, civil liberties, and privacy rights of individuals.
So do you think COVID disinformation threatens our national security?
And number two, if I may, Senator, and number two, is it your proposition that when the cartels spread disinformation with respect to our immigration policies to try to lure vulnerable migrants to our border illegally?
I think you've got no idea what disinformation is, and I don't think the government's capable of it. Do you know who the greatest propagator of disinformation in the history of the world is? The U.S. government. Are you familiar with McNamara, the Pentagon Papers? Are you familiar with George W. Bush and the weapons of mass destruction? Are you familiar with Iran-Contra? I mean, think of all the debates and disputes we've had over the last 50 years in our country. We work them out by debating them. We don't work them out by the government being the arbiter. I don't want your guardrails. I want you to have nothing to do with speech. You think we can't determine, you know, speech by traffickers is disinformation? You think the American people are so stupid they need you to tell them what the truth is? You can't even admit what the truth is with the Steele dossier. I don't trust government to figure out what the truth is. Senator, government is largely disseminating disinformation.
You would know this as a bit of an aside, but in terms of how you think about problem sets, when I was a cadet, what's the cadet motto at West Point? You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It was like we had entire training courses.
One of the hopeful things that I've discovered is that nearly every war that has started in the past 50 years has been a result of media lies. The media could have stopped it if they had searched deep enough. If they hadn't reprinted government propaganda, they could have stopped it. But what does that mean? Well, that means basically populations don't like wars. And populations have to be fooled into wars. Populations don't willingly and with open eyes go into a war. So if we have a good media environment, then we'll also have a peaceful environment.
You killed a million people in Iraq.
That is a separate...
You killed a million people in Iraq. It's incredible that you have the brass neck to be sitting here now urging another Iraq war.
George,
after
if
what
I was still in
done.
Parliament, I...
There can be no doubt that Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more. And he has the ability to dispense these lethal poisons and diseases in ways that can cause massive death and destruction. If biological weapons seem too terrible to contemplate, chemical weapons are equally chilling. UNMOVIC already laid out much of this, and it is documented for all of us to read in UNSCOM's 1999 report on the subject. If we consider just one category of missing weaponry, 6,500 bombs from the Iran-Iraq war, UNMOVIC says the amount of chemical agent in them would be on the order of 1,000 tons. These quantities of chemical weapons are now unaccounted for. Dr. Blick says, quipped that, quote, mustard gas is not marmalade. You are supposed to know what you did with it. We believe Saddam Hussein knows what he did with it, and he has not come clean to the international community. We have evidence these weapons existed. What we don't have is evidence from Iraq that they have been destroyed or where they are. That is what we are still waiting for.
Okay, inspection worth doing. Everybody's agreed it's worth doing, and it gets stopped.
Yes, sir.
At that moment, we're an automatic pilot as far as you're concerned. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. Now, I respect that. But now, it seems to me the Secretary of State might have a slightly different problem. Secretary of State might be sitting there and saying, now look over there on that side. Now, I remember so-and-so, and the 12 people on this side, they're all the ones that said they didn't want to use force. Now, I'm going to have to go tell the president now that we should, or Secretary Cohen, unleash whatever it takes to get it done. And our military assessment is the same as the major's. The major's assessment is, privately held but publicly acknowledged later, that airstrikes alone aren't going to do this. Saddam's not going to cave on this. So, now here's the deal. I recommended the president have at it and let the chips fall where they may. A reasonable position for the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State to take. But I respectfully suggest, Major, I respectfully suggest they have a responsibility slightly above your pay grade. Slightly above your pay grade. To decide whether or not to take the nation to war alone. Or to take the nation to war partway. Or to take the nation to war halfway. That's a real tough decision. That's why they get paid the big bucks. That's why they get the limos and you don't. I mean this sincerely. I'm not trying to be flip, because I think, and that's what I said at the outset, the reason why I'm glad you did what you did, we should come to our milk. We should make a decision. But in terms of whether the Secretary of State has no more to consider than you do as the arms inspector, you didn't get in, didn't get my job done, get me in. Period. You made the deal, right? That's the deal. A deal's a deal. Get me in. Scott Ritter, I'm ready to go. It's not how it works. Now, maybe it should work that way. But wouldn't you acknowledge that if you were President of the United States or the Secretary of State, you'd sit there and say, now, okay, old Scotty boy didn't get in. We said he should get in. We want him to get in. It's important that he does get in. They're not going to let him in. So what are we going to do now? We know that France and Russia aren't going to be with us. We're quite confident China's not. We've already run those traps. They're not there. We're not sure where the United States Senate is, but have at it, boys. Go get them. And by the way, Scott and the boys say air power's not enough. I think it's a legitimate debate, Scott, or Major. I think it's a legitimate debate. But I don't think we should be putting it in the context of you have somebody up there at state saying, look, how can we weasel out of this agreement? We want to let this guy out there hanging. We're not this. It's a very practical political decision. Same kind of decision General Powell made. Same kind of decision President Bush made. Every president, every Secretary of State has to do it. Like I said, they get paid more than you. Their job's a hell of a lot more complicated than yours. They may have made the wrong decision, and you brought it to light. We should address it. We should say straight up where we are, and we should do it. And for that, I thank you, but it's above your pay grade.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon, and one of the generals called me, and he said, sir, you got to come in and talk to me a sec. He says, we've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq. I said, we're going to war with Iraq? Why? He said, I don't know. He said, I guess they don't know what else to do. He said, I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that. He reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today. And he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Well, one of the 4 principal functions of the CIA is to gather intelligence and ideally forward it to the president, the users of information, the policymakers, as they say. There are other functions, however, some of them more legitimate than others. One is to run secret wars, the covert action that's written and talked about so much, like what's happening in Nicaragua today from Honduras. Another thing is to disseminate propaganda to influence people's minds. And this is a major function of the CIA. And unfortunately, of course, it overlaps into the gathering of information. You have contact with a journalist You will give him true stories, you'll get information from him, you'll also give him false stories. For example, in my war, the Angola war that I helped to manage, one-third of my staff was propaganda. Ironically, it's called covert action inside the CIA. Outside, that means the violent part. I had propagandists all over the world, principally in London, Kinshasa, and Zambia. We would take stories which we would write and put them in the Zambia Times, and then pull them out and send them to a journalist on our payroll in Europe. But his cover story, you see, would be that he'd gotten them from his stringer in Lusaka, who had gotten them from the Zambia Times. We had the complicity of the government of Zambia, Kenneth Kaunda, if you will, to put these false stories into his newspapers. But after that point, the journalists at Reuters and AFP, the management was not witting of it. Now, our contact man in Europe was, and we pumped just dozens of stories about Cuban atrocities, Cuban rapists. In one case, we had the Cuban rapists caught and tried by the Ovimbundu maidens who had been their victims, and then we ran photographs that made almost every newspaper in the country of the Cubans being executed by the Ovimbundu women who supposedly had been their victims.
These were fake photos?
Oh, absolutely. We didn't know of one single atrocity committed by the Cubans. It was pure, raw, false propaganda to create an illusion of communists, you know, eating babies for breakfast and that sort of totally false propaganda.
The only reason that I'm allowed to ask you this question is because today the federal court ruled that the government doesn't have the right to determine who is or is not a journalist. This is the second election in a row that the court had to overturn your government. Do you still insist on being able to make that decision, and why?
First of all, questions around accreditation were handled by the press gallery and the consortium of networks who have strong perspectives on quality journalism and the important information that is shared with Canadians. The reality is organizations like yours that continue to spread misinformation and disinformation on the science around vaccines, around how we're going to actually get through this pandemic and be there for each other and keep our kids safe, is part of why we're seeing such unfortunate anger and lack of understanding of basic science. And quite frankly, your, I won't call it a media organization, your group of individuals need to take accountability for some of the polarization that we're seeing in this country. And I think Canadians are cluing into the fact that there is a really important decision we take about the kind of country we want to see. And I salute all extraordinary, hardworking journalists that put science and facts at the heart of what they do and ask me tough questions every day, but make sure that they are educating and informing Canadians from a broad range of perspectives, which is the last thing that you guys do.
Whatever our hopes may be for the future, for reducing this threat or living with it, there is no escaping either the gravity or the totality of its challenge to our survival and to our security. A challenge that confronts us in unaccustomed ways in every sphere of human activity. This deadly challenge imposes upon our society two requirements of direct concern, both to the press and to the president. Two requirements that may seem almost contradictory in tone, but which must be reconciled and fulfilled if we are to meet this national peril. I refer first to the need for far greater public information, and second, to the need for far greater official secrecy. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
Wow. A lot of good insights there. And that should concern us, because a lot of those people are still around and in power today, and those who aren't were honest and open and told us about what was wrong with the media, the CIA's control over all narratives. So do you assume that somehow they've all decided to be honest? No, not at all. I'd like your thoughts. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. One of the people you heard was Senator Joe Biden reading the Riot Act to Scott Ritter. Now, you heard Scott Ritter on this program just a couple weeks ago on our Progressive Commentary Hour talking about virtually everything. Everything you read in America, in the mainstream media about Ukraine, are lies. Russia, are lies. Well, in point of fact, when Biden was promoting war and boots on the ground, Scott Ritter actually was going into Iraq, found that there were no weapons, found that there were no munitions. They had all been destroyed previously, had records of that, but Madeleine Albright would not meet with him. You also heard from a student at the very beginning challenging Madeleine Albright, and of course, she didn't like debates, but she was a war hawk's war hawk. She was the super alpha, a neocon. And today it's Gloria Nuland. Instead of challenging her, writing any critical articles about her in the entire media, they just give her promotion to Undersecretary of State. She's second most powerful person at the State Department, which means she is the power, not Lincoln. He's a fool. But her and her husband and their group, Prospect for New America, they're the people you should be concerned about, because everything they do in secret. Oh, until they were secretly courted planning the coup that the United States spent $5 billion on in Ukraine, so our people could be in power with Poroshenko and et cetera. So now they're still in power. They're still lying about everything all the time. Was Joe Biden ever held accountable? Was Secretary of State Colin Powell ever held accountable? Was he ever held accountable about what he misstated about there were no chemical weapons or biological weapons in Iraq in the first invasion back in the 1990s? No. Nobody was held accountable. Not Schwarzkopf, not Colin Powell, no one. So we are lied to every day in every media constantly. And the truth, and you heard Trudeau there, what a fool he is, the truth is never allowed to be shared on the mainstream media. And I'm going to get to that on my next program in depth. I've edited together all of the lies, the mainstream media, where they should all be fired. They should never again work in journalism. And yet, they're at the top of their media. Well, what's that about? Why are you watching these people? Why are you reading the New York Times? Now, if I could get the New York Times, I would use it every day to put new papers down under my bird. Birds are very messy. Would I trust anything I read in the New York Times? I wouldn't even trust they got the date of the publication right. I'd like to hear from you. 888-874-4888. In the interim, just before we go in 4 minutes for a break from BAI so they can go to the news, I got a call from the station manager, Bertold Reimers, and he's very distressed. I've never seen him this upset, distressed. It was a bad morning for him. And he just said that the station may not survive because they have so much debt and so little income. And unfortunately, and I said to him, you keep asking me or doing premiums, and I don't like that. I'd like to see at least 20 other hosts do premiums matching their show and their audience's needs. And he said, but there's only you and one other person bringing in any money, period. You know, sometimes up to 80%. And that's unfortunate, but it's a reality. So he said, help us out. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We were having a fund drive for Progressive Radio Network by having not an anti-aging retreat, but rather a health retreat, the second and third, or the third and fourth week of, I think those are days, but Luann will tell us, coming up and in September. And these are wonderful experiences. You're exposed to so many healthy things and great lectures. Dr. Peter Resnick is going to be there. So many exercise people, meditation, yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, cooking classes, sprouting classes, fermenting food classes, empowering classes. And I do lectures throughout the day and a big lecture every evening. And Luann does counseling, helping people with whatever issues they bring to her. There's nothing else like it in the world. So if you'd like to join us, then money is set aside from your payment directly and exclusively to buy premiums. So if someone you bought a paid for a premium through a radio program, let's say, and you haven't received it, the station just doesn't have the money. So this way, the station can buy hundreds, if not thousands, of premiums. So we're all caught up on that. So that's what this is about. Luann's on the line now. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Hi, everyone. Yeah, we're coming together with a really nice group of people. But I'm going to tell you something, Gary. Your audience and everyone else out there that I'm speaking to, people are stressed. They turn to you and they listen to you. And the reason why your numbers are probably going up so rapidly is because people need hope. They want to have context with what's going on, and they want to have solutions. And people have found that at the lectures, at the retreats, they actually feel like they go home with tools and they get new perspective of what's going on around us in the world. They stop personalizing things, and they're able to get out there and live healthy lives. They realize the importance of exercise, whether it's in the pool or power walking or in the gym. We tailor the exercise to you and to your life and to your needs. We're going to have art classes. And what a wonderful way. People say, oh, I'm not an artist. But boy, oh boy, we have discovered the art inside of people coming out in so many different mediums. So it's very exciting to see the results of the art classes.
Well, we have the number out before BAI audience splits here.
Oh, absolutely. It's 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Give me a call. I've got to make sure it's right for you. The date?
Yes.
From the 10th to the 23rd.
So you can come for 1 week or two. Now, because
right.
We've already kind of filled up with our PRN audience, we don't have a lot of room. So if you wait, you absolutely won't get in, because it is my philosophy. I don't like to have a lot of people there because I want everyone to get attention. I want everyone to feel that whatever needs to be rebalanced in their life or better understood. A lot of people come who want to get off the grid. I'm going to do a whole workshop on that. That might be 3 or 4 hours, but at least you'll know what to do when you go home, depending upon your circumstance. If you have family or you're taking care of an elder adult, or if you have a mortgage on your house, I deal with everything in life that can help a person live a better life and repurpose themselves. Now, you mentioned art classes. We've had three of the finest artists I know of: Elaine Ryan, Susan Kreil, and Kathleen. I don't know who's coming. You're arranging that. And I've got some other people coming for the very first time to give workshops. But we've got more workshops than a person can attend. So you'll have a wonderful day. The schedule set out. And you say, I'll do that. Or maybe I want to rest today. Maybe I want to go to the Butterfly House and just chill out and be around aromatherapy. Maybe I want to go down, watch the lake and the swans on the lake. Maybe I want to go feed something to the donkeys, the little donkeys that are loving. Or just watch the eagles. By the way, it's something. The eagles, according to the former owner of the villa, back from 1932. He came when these were artisans who came over to build the place. And he's in his 90s, and he shows up one day. I didn't know who he was. I just happened to be there. And he's walking around the property, so I go out and say, hello. He says, oh, I just come back. I used to live here. I was born here. I said, really? You're from the Judge family? He said, yes, I'm the son. And he told me stories I had no way of otherwise knowing. And the fish, there was never any fishing in the lake. So I said, you mean there's been no fish in almost 90 years taken out of the lake? He said, no. So you get down to the lake and you get in this boat with a glass bottom and you just see thousands of fish, healthy as can be. And the lake is clear and clean and beautiful gardens that were built back in the 1930s. All that's there. So you have a chance to really chill out in a beautiful environment with wonderful, by the way, our chief chef is has been chief chef in 4 Michelin rated restaurants. So you talk about gourmet vegan food and a wonderful personality, he has it. Even the crew and the historically, Connie would be kind of the drill instructor, make sure everything gets out of the kitchen on time. And she wasn't here this last time, we missed her. But we had someone take her place who was also, Susan was terrific getting everything out and every all the food comes out and every meal is different. You don't get the same dish twice. But then you get classes on how to do these for yourself. And so it's being in the environment that's positive. Now let me tell you who is not invited. If you're judgmental, if you're angry, if you feel entitled, if you're a narcissist, if you're part of the woke generation, the critical theory generation, if you can't tolerate other people because of their ethnicity or their religion or their political or ideological views or their family values, don't call, don't come. I'll send you home. Okay? We've had a couple people, not many, but a couple people get in, and they just seem like they're seething with hate. Everything we do is about love. We are there to guide people through love and kindness and joy and laughing and having fun. And everybody has fun, unless you come with the idea that I'm not going to have fun. Okay, then, you know, that's your business, but find another place to go to. Listen to Howard Stern all day. You'll like that. So if you're a person who wants to bring the joy and completeness of your own existence and be around other like-minded people, This is the venue, and so give Luann a call. Luann, give your number one more time, and do you have anyone else on the line?
Hopefully we have a couple of people on the line. I'm at 903-881-7008.
Now, who else do we have? Bring me a name, Luann.
Oh, either Russ or Amina.
Okay,
are Russ
or
Amina on the line?
Yes.
Russ? Hi, Russ. Tell her your experience. What did you come expecting? What did you leave collecting and benefiting from?
Hey, Gary. It's just a magnificent experience down there. I can go on forever, so I'll try to limit myself. But I used to go down, as you know, down to the Healing Springs Ranch down in the 90s, and I was part of the running club in the 90s and what's not. A lot of incredible times together, and this was kind of like a homecoming to me because it's been so many years since I've connected with you and Luann and everybody. And it was my first retreat down at the villa in Texas, and such a beautiful atmosphere, beautiful East Texas hill country. You can see the mountains way off in the distance. I'm a big nature person. The lectures in the sculpture garden are kind of the crown jewel of it all. All the workshops with Mitchell Rabin and the yoga in the yoga hut, which is kind of like a screened in porch kind of thing on this beautiful lake. The food is incredible. I dropped a few pounds when I was down there, so that was good, and still working on that. Probably the best thing about it is the positive, like-minded people. It's just so refreshing to be with a bunch of just lighthearted, healthy, like-minded people that I don't have to like monitor my speech with, and I can just be myself. and, you know, the pool with John and Luann and the...
And by the way, let me interrupt because we're running out of time. But Russ, yeah. one of the best workshops people had last time was with Mitchell Raven. Mitchell brings a lifetime of experience in Qigong, meditation, and energy exchange, and Tai Chi. And there's laughter, there's joy, there's the release of anxiety, there's a release of angst, there's a release of stress. All that people have experienced. And Russ, I haven't forgot any of the marathons you and I did together. Many marathons, many races. So we look forward if you come back, all right?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for everything, Gary. And Mitchell is just a joy to be with. I could sit and read the phone book with Mitchell and have a great time.
And who else is on the line right now, real quick? Who else do we have?
We have Amina.
Hi.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Please tell us, sorry we don't have much time. Please tell us what you experienced there.
Well, I went two times. And I had a very good time. I was impressed with the grounds that I was at. It was beautiful, spacious. All these beautiful people that came for the same purpose, that was enjoying the same way as me. I enjoyed a lot the organic made food, gourmet made food, yoga classes. It was done with professional Luann's medical consultations, gym, lectures. It was tremendous. I loved it much in the Socrates Garden.
Unfortunately, we have to go because we have another program right behind this. And so anyone who would like to join us, it can be a wonderful experience. If you need a wonderful experience, if you need a chance to exhale, get rid of the anxiety, and go to the core of your problems, that's what I focus on, then this is a place for you. Luann, one last time, real quick, give your phone number.
Yes, 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. Stay tuned. We have a really good program coming right at you. Have a nice day.